100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by North Carolina mountain buck hunter Ryan Elders. Ryan has been hunting the mountains of Western North Carolina his entire life with some great success, which has led to success on out-of-state hunts no matter where he goes. We discuss some of Ryan's success stories, why he chooses the windward side of the ridge, scrapes, backpack hunting, out-of-state deer hunting rut trips, and much more. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming from Alex Grosso out of Pennsylvania. He said, "This is my 2019 PA buck and my biggest to date. I decided to take a hike and reach the ridge top of this mountain. The west side of the mountain is very steep and acts as a constant wind tunnel. I sat just over the ridgeline facing east one morning, where I was still able to see well across the ridgeline behind me, which was about 25 yards wide. Here, the wind is pretty calm, unlike the opposite side. On the west side of the mountain, where it's steep, it's covered with big rocks, making it hard for deer to travel. Also, there's a small bench about 50 yards below the rocks. There is a perfect pinch where the rocks split up for about 10 yards, which makes a perfect transition for the deer to cross to get to the opposite side of the ridge that I was set up on. During a walk and stalk hunt a couple days earlier, I found that feature and could hardly find any buck sign. No rubs, scrapes, or anything. But at the bottom of the ridge, there is a nice big food source with clover and other ag. There was plenty of sign down there, which I assumed was being made during the night. Something told me this was a great area to post up at. It had constant wind, exit routes, and cover, pines, and some long brush. It was 7 a.m. Gray light was just hardly making the woods visible. I heard something behind come over the west slope, walk around on the ridge top for a moment, then it became quiet. I saw a brief shadow of something, but couldn't make it out what it was yet. At this point, I knew it was a single deer, must have sat down bed along the top of the brush. I texted my cousin a few minutes later and told him, I'm pretty sure there's a buck bedding 20 yards behind me and to my right. At 7:29 a.m., I took a photo of the sun coming over the mountains as it shined down on us. The very moment the sun lit up on the ridge I was sitting on, 7:30, the deer got up from the ridge top to begin working his way down the east-facing ridge. He gave me a perfect 25-yard broadside shot. I know that because every time I look at that photo, it reminds me how the few seconds after I set it down, the buck came out. I believe this buck was using the west-facing slope, and its wind is covered during the night, and then came to bed at the top until the thermals begin to rise in the morning, and use those to work his way down to his day bed. Well, congratulations, Alex, and I urge everybody to head over to East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook to check out this buck. It's probably one of the most massive deer that I've seen, especially coming out of Pennsylvania, but just the amount of mass and palmation on this deer is crazy. Such a cool mountain buck. So congratulations, Alex. And yeah, good luck this season. And if anybody else has some stories they want to send in, some mountain buck success stories, send them in to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. There's been a ton of them rolling in. Love to see it. Love to be able to share this stuff. So just share over your stories and I'll get them up. In other news, I got a lot of news this week, but I'll try to keep it short and sweet. My 2022 Pennsylvania deer hunt video is live on YouTube. So it just dropped on Sunday. I finally got it done being edited. This is not a fancy film by any means. This is basically me self-filming the whole season, showing you the process, and really showing how I was chasing a particular deer for the last 3 years and kind of breaking that down. And I've never showed him at all, never showed any trail cam pictures, any of that stuff until now because he is dead. And so I hope that you guys enjoy that. Let me know what you think. If you like it, leave a comment. You want to see more of that. You know, I'm always self-conscious a little bit when I'm doing the self-filming there, and it's not the best quality, but I tried to bring some education in it and show some maps and some different things to kind of give you a visual of what I was thinking during that time frame. Last year was a tough season. It was really difficult to get on a buck, but it ended up working out on the last day that I had to hunt during the archery season. So I hope everyone enjoys that. Also, outdoor class. So I had talked about that a while back, but my course, Scouting Big Woods Bucks Part 1, is live on Outdoor Class. So Outdoor Class I'd recommend going back and listening to the episode I did in May with Randy Newberg. It was your May or June, I think it came out, talking about it. But basically, it's a collective of hunters from all different walks and chefs and all these different things to be able to teach you and have all these courses in one place, one price. Everything's included. Remy Warren has courses on there. Corey Jacobson, Randy Newberg, Mark Livesay, John Barklow, you name it. And so I'm pretty happy to be and just grateful to be involved with those names there. But if you want to use my code BEAU, just BEAU, yeah, you'll save, I believe it's 20% off of the course. So check that out. And lastly, I just want to say this episode has a little bit of breakup in audio and video there. Ryan was having some connection problems during the episode, so I apologize for that. I think that Matt and the team were able to splice it together pretty good. So hopefully you don't turn it off because of it, but I think it won't be that bad. But anyways, thanks so much for listening. If you like the podcast, please share it with your friends and leave a rating and review. That helps out so much. Well, this is our favorite time of year here as whitetail hunters. So good luck to everybody. Stay safe and keep your head on a swivel. All right, we're live. Ryan Elders, welcome to the podcast.
It's good to be here, dude. It is good to be here.
Yeah, man.
I'm a little nervous, but I'm good. I'm happy about it.
Oh, you'll be good. This is your first podcast. It's not very often that I can find guests that are podcast virgins, so like I'm pumped about that.
There's no doubt. I'm pretty quiet about how I hunt and how I do things, so I mean, you're the first, so...
Yeah. Well, you had caught my attention. I guess it was back in 2020 when we first started chatting a little bit. You had sent in a submission for Mountain Buck Monday. I think it was 2020, wasn't it?
It's 2020, yeah.
Yeah. You had sent in a submission with you and your buddy Taylor to about two giant bucks that you guys had killed in North Carolina hunting the mountains and stuff. And I was like, holy cow, like, this is serious. And I remember looking at your Instagram page and I'm like, man, he's killing bucks left and right. And it was just, it seemed like you were on it, but you're, you know, putting in a lot of work. So like it was super interesting to me at that point. And then we finally got to meet up here in August at the Timber Ninja open house. And you and I sat there and talked deer hunting for probably 3 hours, maybe longer.
Easy,
and I was like,
easy yeah, 3 hours.
Yeah. Man, we need to get you on the podcast.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was good getting to meet you in person there and talk through it. And it's so cool because I get to meet a lot of sweet people just through the podcast and events going to it. But it's like the way, you know, that you guys hunt and stuff, although that there's obviously differences across the board and styles and a little bit with train, things like that. But there's so much similarities, you know, between Pennsylvania, the places I hunt and, you know, where you're at, North Carolina and Virginia and the whole Appalachian mountain range. But I guess first, I'm sure you say Appalachian, don't you?
Yeah, Appalachian.
Everyone from the South makes fun of me for saying Appalachian, but that's just the way we pronounce it.
Appalachian, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so Ryan, when we get it kicked off here, I just wanted to see if you could give a brief background, kind of who you are, you know, what you do for a living, and like kind of how you got into chasing mountain bucks.
I grew up in Western North Carolina my entire life. Didn't know that I was, you know, chasing mountain bucks. It's just our terrain, man. It's what we have to hunt. You know, it wasn't like, you know, this mountain buck thing has just gotten out of hand. You know, everybody's like, oh, mountain buck. And I mean, it's just normal to me. This is what we have to hunt. And, you know, I didn't go out of my first out of state hunt until I was probably in my early 20s. You know, I've hunted this my entire life. So going out of state and going to Ohio and stuff was an eye opener for me. But so I've lived in Western North Carolina, hunted here my whole life. My dad's a big deer hunter, so of course I was, you know, immersed in it at a young age. And my dad, he beat woodsmanship into my head, number one. And I mean, it's worked the last few years, but they worked for Pepsi. I've worked there 14 years, and it's a pretty good gig. Get a lot of vacation. And the one good thing about it was before I had the boy was we go in early and we get off kind of early. So I was getting in the woods every day. You know, that's one reason I stayed there for so long. You know, I was in the woods just about 4 to 5 evenings a week. And so that was big. But after we've had the boy, you know, I've had to kind of sacrifice. And I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I wouldn't take it back for nothing. You know, I'm just going to have to rely on some more historical data this year because I haven't got to get in the woods like I really need to or want to. But I mean, it's a good trade off. So.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I wanted to comment on something. You're talking about the term mountain bucks, because where, you know, where I grew up, that's just, you know, what we hunted was the big woods.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, some places were steeper than others, but like, it was just like, that's what we hunted. But when I moved away, I don't know if it was in college or afterwards, I moved to the Pittsburgh area and everyone's like, oh, you're from the mountains. You hunt those mountain bucks. And I remember like that just stuck in my mind. And I'm like, cause I just didn't know, you know, that was just what we hunted. And that's kind of where that term came from. And, you know, now it's like a pretty household term. But which is like for a guy, go ahead.
I said the mountain buck thing, you know, like, I don't know how you classify a mountain buck and I classify a mountain buck, you know, like these deer that are down in our settlements and stuff, like they're not mountain bucks to me. You know what I mean? Like the deer I'm killing on these sides of these cliffs and, you know, in roto thickets and mountain laurel thickets, like that's a mountain buck to me. On public land, you've walked your hind end off, you know, you've pulled 2,000 feet elevation to get where you're at. That's a mountain buck, you know. And people throw that term around. Oh, I killed a mountain buck, and they're taking a picture of him in a, you know, cut hay field. It's like I don't really feel like that's a mountain buck, you know. What my definition of a mountain buck would be.
No, that makes sense. And it's funny because I've had that question asked me, like, what do you define as a mountain buck? Like, how much elevation needs to be gained? And I'm like, I don't really know. But like when I'm hunting areas that are like. And not that it really matters, but it's just, it's funny. But like, there's areas that I have that are like more rolling, flatter, but still just all timber. So I call that more like big woods bucks. And then, you know, as you get into to steeper, bigger stuff, it's like mountain bucks. But I'm not exactly sure.
They're all the same. You know, I mean, they're all equally as hard to kill. It's not like they're any easier.
Tomato, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you for sure.
That's cool. But you know, I noticed that like you've hunted with your dad quite a bit and everything, like even just like hearing from your stories and your posts and stuff that I've seen in the past, like it definitely seemed like a similar kind of upbringing like that I had with, you know, having a father that kind of taught you through some of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean my dad's drug me through every laurel thicket and ridge and rock cliff and all over the place, man. I mean, he really spent the time with me, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't have to, but he did, and this is the way he hunted, so in turn this is the way I hunt.
Yeah, no,
and
he's
getting older up in age, and he can't get where he, you know, he can't get to the places he'd like to get to anymore. So he sends me in there. Like, hey, man, you went and checked that rock bluff out? You know, I ain't hunted in there since like 1990, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. So he's kind of living a little bit through you now with like some of the spots he probably used to get to and everything.
Yeah. But that's, he was with me in 2021, and that was cool, man. That was fun.
Well, yeah. Tell me a little bit about that hunt. Like what happened there? And like with you, I know you said your dad was with you on it.
So I start in 2020. So I was hunting a deer in 2020 and he was a big mainframe 10. And I mean, just a slob of a deer. And I laid with him dirty faced and I actually killed the deer that I sent you on the mountain buck. I knew that deer was there too, but he was so like sporadic and he just would never come through there. And so I was hunting in there for the 10. And that deer come by and I killed him and it tagged me out for the year. So I really kept tabs on that big 10. I was like, man, like, I really want to kill that deer. And he was really nocturnal. And whenever he'd show up in daylight, it'd be like Tuesday at like 10 o'clock. And I'd be getting a cell cam picture of him while I'm rolling drinks at Pepsi. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you're killing me, man. And I'd go in there, lay with him like 2 or 3 days, nothing. And so in 2021, I decided, I was like, man, I've got to find where this deer. I knew the general vicinity of where he was bedding, but I wasn't like, I don't think like our deer don't bed. Like they'll be in beds, but they're not like in one bed. Like I think it's more of like they're bedding on this face. or they're bedding, you know what I mean? They're close to the same bedding area, but they're not exactly in the same bedding area. And so I was like, I'm going to figure out where this deer's coming from. So 2021, I really laid with that deer, and I was like, man, like, this is the deer. No other deer. It's going to be him or bust. And, dude, I run like a trail, like a trap line of cameras in there, and never picked him up. And I was like, dude, is he alive or is he dead? What happened to him? And when I was getting pictures of other good bucks, and I had actually had a deer in there. I had some, he had a flyer and a split brow and whatnot. And I was like, and he was decently regular. And I was like, well, I mean, he's in there, you know, I'll go in there and hunt. And this is the same place I killed the deer in 2020. So I go in there that morning, and Dad was like, hey, you want me to come with you? And I was like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like an hour. It's like an hour and 30, hour and 40, just depending on. And he's like, well, I'll go as far as I can go with you. I was like, cool, man. So we went, and, you know, he turned off where he was going to turn off. And he was actually on the low side of the clear cut that I was hunting on the upper side. And so he texts me. This is the craziest story. So he texts me at like 7:30, and he was like, dude, I just let a dandy slip me. And I was like, what, are you getting old on me? You know what I mean? Like, you don't ever let these deer slip you. And he was like, man, he said, he was in that clear cut, and he just, you know, it was right at daylight, and he was like, man, he just slipped me. And I was like, ah, whatever. And he was like, well, he's headed your way. And I was like, yeah, right. 40,000 acres of government land. Like, he can go anywhere. And me and him are probably, God, we're probably 800, 900 yards apart. We're a pretty good click apart. And he was like, he's headed your way. And I was like, yeah, whatever. So I'm sitting there, and, you know, in every twig now, because he's told me he's coming my way, I'm like kicking my head around, like head's on a swivel. And I was sitting there, and it kind of just like got in my own little zone, and kind of just let that slide, you know, like, well, you know, it's 40,000 acres. What's the chances of this? And I hear something, and so I leaned over and looked down the ridge, and it's real thick in there, man. It's like, it's a clear cut and a select cut and a mountain laurel thicket. They all kind of diverge right there, and there's a scrape. It's like 3 points just meet right there. And that scrape just gets wore out. I mean, it just, there'll be 17 different bucks on it. You know, they just, they may not stay there. They may be passing through, whatever. And so I'm sitting there, and I hear that, and I lean out and I look, and the way the sun's coming in there through those, through all the briars and whatnot, all I can see is tines coming up the ridge. And I was like, ooh, that's a shooter. You know how it is. Like, when you see one, you know, it's a shooter. Like, yeah, yeah. No, like thinking about it. Like, and so I leaned back and I picked up my rifle, and I leaned back over. And when I leaned back over, he was in a bunch of stuff. And, he kept, I had a cell camera there, like I said, and I could feel it vibrating in my pocket, and it sending me pictures. And I'm looking down the scope of this deer. I just can't do anything about it. He's just in all those brambles. And I'm like, dude, just give me something. You know, just give me something. Well, he breaks out of the scrape, and he comes walking up the hill. And there's a big red oak between me and him. And I'd kind of got where I hunt at in there. I know, like a lot of your people in here, and, you know, Nathan Killen and Weiss and what, they talk about the off wind. And that's what I kind of had, was an off wind. But I also had played my thermals to a, there's a little bowl right in below me, and all my thermals, you drop milkweed, son, it sticks in that thermal. And I mean, it won't go anywhere. Like, it just drops into that hole and it stays there. And, so he got right on the edge of that bowl, and any like big deer, they don't blow all the time. You know, they just kind of like, dude, something ain't right here. And he went to back up, like he'd froze there, and he was staring up the hill, and he could smell me. He just, in his brain, he couldn't figure out where I was at. And, so he went to back up, like, you know how they just kind of like step backwards. And when he backed up and turned down the hill, I had like, I gave him the gusto, man. I had like a, probably an 8-inch hole through those briars, and I cracked him right in the back of the neck. And I mean, he hit the ground, and at this point, I still didn't know how good he was. And I knew he was a good deer. And as soon as I tap the trigger, my phone goes just, Dad's calling me. I answer it, and he was like, what was that? I was like, I don't know. It was a dandy. It was a good deer. I mean, I don't know how big it was, but he had some tines on him. And he said, well, you call me back when if you get down there, and he's a real good one. So I get down there, and I come around the side of that big red oak, and I look at him, and I'm like, dude, what did I just kill? You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at him, he's laying there, he's got, you know, 13, 14-inch G3s, and I'm like, good night, man. You know, like, So I'm like staring at him, like, oh, I got to call dad back, you know? And so I'm like looking at him, like sitting in front of him, you know, and how you do, you just sit there and admire him for a minute. And I'm looking at him, I'm like, dude, this is my 10 point. This is the 10 point I've been hunting here for 2 years. And what he'd done is he had messed up his left side, and it kind of curls back in towards his forehead and looks like a ball bat on the end. He just messed his whole, like, where he was that big, perfect 10, he done something in velvet and just wadded that side up. I mean, it's still like a 23.5-inch main beam, but it was just like all wadded up and gnarled up on the end. And so I called dad. Anyways, I called dad back. I'm like, oh, dad, dude, he's a stud, you know. And he was like, I got one question for you. And he was like, He's like, is his horn crooked? And I was like, yeah, it's got a whole, like, its whole left side curls back towards his forehead. And he was like, that's the deer I saw this morning.
No way.
And I was like, there's no way. How else would he have known that it had a curled in horn like that? Unless he saw it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because it's a pretty, like, severe curl in. Like, he saw the deer. It just slipped him that morning. And I'm guessing that he was laid out. I mean, I don't know. I've never had a picture of a big deer on that side of the mountain. The side that he was, that side of the draw that he was on. I've got cameras and stuff over there. I've just never had a picture of a big deer over there. And there's some big old rubs over there, but I've just never had the picture of them. So I've never spent any time over on that side. And you know how old guys are. I'm sure your dad's the same way. It just looks like a place a deer will come through. You know, it just looks like. Yeah. It's just got that intuition, you know. And like, well, man, I don't have any confidence in it, so you can just hammer down with it. And but it's just weird, man. Like that many acres and that deer just – it walks from him to me. Like how, like, you couldn't do that a million times over.
Well, it's funny you say that, like, about the intuition thing. Cause it's like my dad and even some of my other family members are like that. It's just like, you know, it's just, you look at it and the more I've gotten to hunt, you start to get those feelings. But now I always like ask myself, why does it feel like this is a good, you know, good spot. Like, you know, just like out of my own curiosity, I think it comes from doing the podcast and other stuff. I'm always like curious of like why, and, you know, but some, you know, it's, you get that intuition. It's super good. But I'd like to ask a couple other questions about like that setup was like, so in the places like that you hunt, do they typically just log like the top of the hills? Or they do side hills? Anything like
that? No, they do mostly. I mean, you know, I mean, you've walked here with Jason some. You've seen how like rough and steep our stuff is. Like it's our tops might be 20 yards wide. You know what I mean? There's some of them that neck down to like needle tops. But so they usually do the side hills. I mean, it's just easier. They highline log them. You know, they put a crane at the top end and they, you know, they cut them and come out with a winch and stuff. But so they usually side hill our stuff. And I do things a little different than, you know, a lot of people, you know, you hear that, the tactic thing, you know, like it's just been overused. Like, oh, you know, this is a tactic and that's a tactic. And it's like, man, you know, like I feel like everything, some things work better for other people than they do for you. So the way that I look at it is everything works different for everybody else. You know what I mean? Like if you have something that works, don't change it because you're, you know, so-and-so said, or, you know, whatever. Anyways, I'm going to think everybody, whenever they start hunting mountains and hill country, everybody buys the Dan Infault Hill Country DVD. I mean, I think everybody watches that, you know, leeward sides of mountains, this and that, and the buck bed and all that. And, you know, a lot of everybody talks about the mountains hunting the leeward sides. And, yes, whenever I'm hunting early season and I'm hunting, you know, hunting in the early season and hunting the rut. But once I figure out those bucks are starting to push does, you know, and they're starting to check does, I'm 100% going to the windward side. And I mean, people like look at me like I'm crazy when I say that, but like I got to have some sort of structure below me that I think the does are bedding in, clear cut, laurel thicket, you know, something like that. But those bucks, I like that, you know, 40, 50 yard pinch from the top of the ridge to wherever that's at. And those bucks seem to cruise that. And that's that spot like I'm talking about in 2020 deer to 2021 deer. That's kind of what it is. It just, you know, those deer don't want to be on the top of the ridge. They want to be, you know, they don't want to be silhouetted up there. So they're going to get off on the side hill and they can cruise that and they can get the wind out of the clear cut, wind out of the select cut, wind out of the laurel thicket and still have the wind in their face. and they can cruise that ridge. And it's just like a small little gap right there that they can do that in. And it's one of those spots, you know, the intuition. I walked in there the first time and I was like, dude, this place is like, wind's right, thermal's right. Like, this is it. This is the killing spot. And I mean, it's worked. But I just think that those big deer, man, when they live by their nose, they live by their thermals, they live by their nose. And that's the only problem I have in there is I have to have a northwest wind. You know, I have to. Like, I'm not getting away with anything but a northwest wind in there. You know, anything southeast, anything east at all, it's not happening.
Interesting. So, I mean, all right. So, how does that ridge run then? So, like, you'd be on a western side.
I'd be on a western slope. Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
The actual leeward side, if you had a western wind, is that more open or is it the same type of terrain over there? What is that? Your vegetation?
It's more open on that side. Open, you know, big timber.
Yeah. And I would totally agree. I totally agree with you on that. I don't think you're crazy as far as like, I was talking about it when I did a scouting camp. We were at a spot. It was a piece of private, big, but it was all big woods. I get you consider it mountain country. And the leeward side was wide open, just mature oaks and cherry and other timber. And the windward side had laurel thickets. And it was like, that's where the sign was. And it's like, for me, the way I look at it, and again, it could be different for everybody, but the way I look at it is the deer have, you know, the sense of smell, they have a sense, you know, their eyesight, and they have their hearing. And it's like, they need at least a couple of those in their favor to really do it. And it's like, okay, yeah, the leeward side, yeah, you have your wind, you know, maybe a little bit better, but it's like, what else they have? Like, they can't really escape, they can't, you know, the hearing, yeah, where they can, you know, with the thick cover, those does can bed in there and be able to hear, they can, you know, somewhat be able to smell, you know, with the thermals and everything that are there. And you know, they have eyesight, like if they're bedding on the edge of it or even just in the center. But it's just like, they, to me, I value cover over wind when it comes down to something like along that versus open woods.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm with you. I that high stem count, wherever the sign is, man, like wherever the sign is, I don't care if it's windward, leeward. I'm not big on, like, you know, straight north facing, you know, points and slopes and stuff like that. I don't feel like, you know, it's colder there, you know, in the winter months, and I don't feel like the deer use them as much. I mean, I could be missing, you know, Mundo over there on the north point, you know, with the wind blowing in his face, but you know, I can't have any confidence over there. You know, there's just not a lot of, I never find a whole lot of sign over there, you know. I mean, I guess in the summer, I guess that's where they do summer, you know, just because of the cooler. But, I mean, as far as hunting wise, I mean, I've killed deer on the leeward sides. I'm not saying that I haven't, but that windward side, like if you can get some structure below you, it just seems like you can just, you can pinch them, you know, like they're going to come through there. They're going to come scent bump. They're going to, and all those bucks, you know, they're just scent checking that stuff. You know, I mean, they smell a hot dog, they're going to break into it before they ever get to you. But if they're scent checking it, I mean, they're just cruising that little pinch through there.
Yeah. And so what, like in the spots that you're setting up, what are you setting up as far as what is the wind doing in the spot where you like to set up? Like, do you, like you said, you were talking about that upper edge of that structure, whether it's laurel or clear cut or whatever, like how do you want the wind to be coming? You know, you said the windward side, but what exactly does that mean from how you set up?
Like if you're setting on that west face, and so the way that I set up there is all the structures below me, and I am dead in line with where I was talking about that scrape is. I am dead in line with where all that point meets. I mean, it's like 40 yards below me. And so if anything is coming in there on a northwest wind, it is at an angle where it's coming from either that scrape, thicket, whatever, and it's coming across me and blowing over top of the ridge and hitting that big open timber down there where I'm not expecting him to be. You know, I don't want him there because I can't see it. So I'm expecting him to be in this high stem count coming around through there in that high stem count, you know, and he can smell it all. He feels safe. Like the first deer in 2020, the big heavy horn deer, dude, I shot him at like 15 yards on the ground. He didn't even know I existed. Until, you know what I mean? Until I leaned out to get around a limb because I was sitting on the ground. When I leaned out to shoot him, like that was the first moment he knowed I was even in the world. He come through there like a donkey with his ears laid back, just kind of bouncing through there. You know what I mean? Like he was like totally oblivious. Yeah. And I mean, and all he had to do was move up the ridge maybe 25 yards. If he'd have come 25 yards higher, he'd have smelled before I ever saw him. It's just, that's where they move at, you know, and that's the point. From there down, I've had some smaller bucks walk out that top, you know, and wind me, but I just don't think those big deer are going to walk straight out the top of that ridge, you know. I just I run a camera up there just to make sure that I'm not missing something. Yeah. I always pull it when I go in, you know, and I've had pictures. I had that picture of the 2020 deer up there of a night. I mean, like 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd walk the top of that ridge because there were some scrapes on top of that ridge. And I'm sure he could still scent check all that stuff. I'm sure he was smelling those, you know, and he was making testosterone-born scrapes on top of that ridge just, you know, to let everybody know, hey, man, I'm here.
Yep.
But it's funny, I was talking about the 2021 deer, the big 10. He was a 9 when I killed him. He was a big 10 when I hunted him the first time. So he was pretty regular in that scrape I was talking about. Like, he cleaned it out, like, on the rig. But it was a lot of, like, those, like, right at, like, 10 minutes before daylight, 10 minutes like after dark. So I knew I was like a pretty good ways from his bedding, but I mean, I still thought, you know, one hot doe. That's what I always tell myself in the mountains around here, man. It's just one hot doe. You know, that's all it takes. And that deer, whenever the 2020 deer showed up, that big heavy horn 9-point, when he showed up, I noticed something was up because that big 10 was like getting, he was real like on point coming to that scrape. And then he kind of started getting sporadic, and I hadn't got a picture of that big heavy horn deer yet. And I started having my 2 and 3 year olds come through that scrape, and dude, their whole main beam sheared off. They're down, tines missing. You know what I mean? Just beat up. And I was like, well, I know it's not that big 10 because he's still perfect. Like, he's still got the sharp points on his horns. He's like no breakage, no nothing. And I was like, I mean, he's big enough. He's heavy enough. I mean, he could break some horns. But then I got a picture of that deer on the 27th of November, I think. It was 27th of November, 28th of November. I got a picture. He came in and worked that scrape. And the moment he worked that scrape, there was not another deer came to that scrape. He was the only one I killed him on December the 7th. He was the only buck that came back to that scrape after he cleaned it out the first time. There was not another deer came to that scrape.
And that was the 2020 buck, right?
Yeah, that was the big heavy horn, the big old fat horn deer. But you know, well,
they both looked pretty heavy horn, so I was struggling with the quality.
The 2020 deer is he don't have the tines that 2021 deer does, but he has his horns, dude. They look like bananas, man. His tines and stuff are just heavy. I mean, the longest tine he had was like 7 inches, but I mean, he was. I had him aged. You know how that goes. I mean, people talk about age this, age that, and they said he was 6.5. And I mean, I've killed some big old deer. I've killed deer in Missouri. I've killed deer in Ohio. And you know those Ohio deer, dude, they're stupid big. And yeah. That deer was like up there with an Ohio deer body wise. And I mean, you kill 180-pound deer here, you've killed a slob. Like, that's a big deer. And yeah. He was, I wish I could have weighed him, but I never got the chance to weigh him because, I drove around. I actually carted that deer out. I didn't even cut him up. He was so big. Like, I was like, dude, this deer's so big. Like, I want people to see. Yeah. I mean, dude, his legs, man, they look like coffee cans. I mean, he was just this big old burly thing. And, you know, I saw him breaking all those deer. The tips of all his tines were just like splinter shattered. And so when I was like, that's the deer that's been breaking everything. You know, that's the deer. And you'll never know, but I mean, every tip of his horns were just shattered, just chips tipped off of him. I mean, you're not breaking that. It looked like my forearm. You know what I mean? You're not breaking that horn off.
Yeah.
So I guess he was the one, he was just a bully. He was just a bully. I guess that's why none of the rest of the deer, I mean, I'm not a biologist, but I'm guessing that's why none of the rest of the deer come back to the scrape. They're like, oh, dude, he's here. I'm not coming back through here. You know, not until he's gone. And it's funny, I killed him December the 7th, and that scrape was hot. I mean, like, there was deer coming through it all the time until he came to it, and I killed him. And it took – our season closed, like, on the 12th that year. I think it was December 17th, or it was, like, 10 days. It was, like, 10 days that big 10 came back and cleaned that scrape out. After I'd killed that deer, and all the other deer came back and started working that scrap again, like it never happened.
Well, and you guys, would you consider December, like when you'd killed that deer and stuff, like the rut?
First week of December, man.
Okay. That's what, yeah. Where you're at. I remember Jason always talking about December, like being pretty, like a hot time.
The first,
like,
second.
Yeah, where that's first different, week, yeah. You know, like where I'm at in Pennsylvania, it's like first, second week in November, and then I go to southern West Virginia, and it's like that third week into Thanksgiving is super hot, and then even like my buddies down there talk about the beginning of December still being good, and then as you go further south in, you know, North Carolina, it's like, it just seems like that seems to be a pretty good time.
And I think people will fight me on this but I've seen it. I run enough trail cameras, man. I think we talked about the Timber Ninja thing, dude. I run a lot of trail cameras, and I see the activity pick up the first week of November. You know, I see that on my scrapes and stuff. And I honestly think that some of the does are either coming into estrus or something, because that like 6th through 16th of November. My scrapes just explode. I mean, just there's bucks on them, daylighting them, you know, just, and that's still our bow season. That's our second bow season. And, so this deer just explode in there, man. And then it kind of dies off, you know, through Thanksgiving. You'll get a straggler or two coming through cleaning the scrape out. But that Thanksgiving week on, it starts to build then, you know what I mean? It starts to, like, you're catching like on like cell cameras and stuff. You're getting pictures of a doe and she's just booking it by the camera. You know, and it's not fast enough to catch the buck that's behind
yeah,
it. You
yeah.
know what's going on. You know, 7:30 in the morning, there's a doe just like dogging by your camera. You know something's happening. You know, it's on. And that's usually first, second week of December-ish, something like that.
Yeah. Do you run your cameras on video mode at all?
Mm-hmm. Some of them I do.
Yeah, it depends. Like if I'm going to have one soak for a year, or I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to it, I usually put it on photo mode just because of like battery life and SD cards and everything. And, but you know,
I mean, you're probably the same way in Pennsylvania with the bears, man. I don't, the tactical cameras is about the expensivest trail camera I'm going to buy, you know? And I mean, I've wanted to try the Exodus cameras just cause everybody has the luck with them, you know, and they got the warranty on them and I'm sure they're really good cameras, but dude, I've hung cameras and they've been there 3 days and you're expecting to go back and get a card pull and it's been hanging there 3 days and a bear just slapped it off the tree, you know? And it's like,
yeah.
Well, there goes, you know, if it was $100 camera, well, there's $100 camera cause he just crunched it, you know? So, I mean, I try to run some cheaper, you know, Walmart cameras as my satellite camera. I try to base everything around, if I have cell service, try to base everything around a cell camera and then try to run a trap line, you know, I don't want to think that deer's coming from the north. I want to know he's coming from the north, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny. It's funny you say that about the bears, because like I just had camera. I think I had posted on my Instagram story. I don't know if you saw it. Like it was back in August, but I had set up this camera and I sprayed my scrape licking branch with some forehead glands scent. And this bear just got so pissed. Like he threw his body into the branch and then just beelined it right for my camera. And I had it cabled to the tree and I didn't have it high either. Like it was right in his line of sight and it came over and it ripped it off to the side, but it didn't tear it off the tree, luckily. Cause like I usually lose 2 to 3 cameras a year from bears. I rarely have people messing with them. Other than last year, I had this guy who ended up finding out who it was that had wrecked one of my cameras, but most of it is normally bears that I have problems with. And they're nasty with it. So I totally do understand it. And I used to run bear boxes or security boxes, but we called them bear boxes, on all my cameras when I was younger. But like I got so many cameras now, I can't afford to throw, you know, bear boxes on all of them.
Put like 50 bear boxes on them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're heavy as hell, you know, trying to carry them in your pack.
No, I ain't doing that. You know, I mean, I'll sacrifice it for a bear. You know what I mean? It is what it is. And I think they smell the batteries. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like the scent on your hands or what, but man, they'll come up and you'll get those nose pictures. Like their nose is sniffing around. And then the next thing you know, it's like upside down. Or then it's back up again. And then it's looking at leaves, you know, and then it's over with. The camera's it's dead.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that about the batteries. So my dad will like to hear that, because me and my dad were just like not arguing, but we bought these batteries. We were trying to find a cheaper lithium battery option than Energizers, because they're through the roof, which someone did reach out to me through the podcast, and I bought some batteries off of them. Don't know how, you know, where they got them from, but they were good price Energizer lithiums.
China lithiums.
So anyways, me and my dad bought these ones off Amazon that were some like no-name brand lithium, you know, China ones, and weren't sure how they're working, but they got them on the box and they had a smell to them. And my dad's like, he's like, I can't put these in my cameras. They have a smell to them. He's like, I think, you know, it's going to attract bears and maybe the deer can smell them. And I'm like, you're crazy. Like I was just like, I don't know if they're going to smell that. And he's like, I can't put these in my cameras. And it's funny that you said that. And they did. Like, after I realized that I was just, you know, being argumentative just to be a son, you know, that's what you do about things.
Oh yeah.
And then I was like, it definitely had a smell to it.
Well, you know, you were talking about Tyler earlier, and me and him grew up together. You know, we've hunted together since we were like, I don't know, kids. Like, since we got our license, man, we were just like out there not even knowing what we were doing. Anyways, we have this running joke that he's not allowed to touch trail cameras because every time he touches them, I don't know if it's his red hair or what it is, dude, but he can mess a camera up in a hurry. Like, it's just like, if he touches it, it either the batteries die, a bear tears it off the tree. Like, okay, so I've turned him on to these tachycams, right? And he's like, man, that's cool, man. I'm going to get me some of them. And so this year, we had walked in a spot like a couple years ago, and he's like, man, you remember where the big scrape is, you know, up underneath that big rock ledge? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, little finger ridge right there. And I was like, yeah. He's like, I'm gonna hang one of those tachycams on it. And I was like, oh, yeah, man. I said, you sure you don't want me to walk in there so I can set it up so, you know, nothing happens to it, so you don't put some bad juju on it? He was like, oh, man, it's brand new. It should be fine. And he sent me, like, the first night he set it up, he sends me this picture of this doe, and he was like, oh, that happened fast, you know? And I mean, he'd had it up, like, 2 hours, you know? And he was like, oh, that, you know, that happened fast. And the next couple of days, you know, I never got no pictures from it, you know? And I was expecting to get, you know, some hog pictures or, you know, buck picture or whatever. I was like, hey, I said, you got any pictures up there? And he was like, I don't want to talk about it, man. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, it's not even sending me check-in pictures. And I was like, yeah, bears probably ate it. And he was like, I didn't even get no pictures of a bear eating it. I was like, it's probably what happened. So last weekend he goes in there, and he's like, I got to go in there. And it's muzzled season here now. And he's like, man, I got to go in there. I got to check that, you know, see what's going on with that camera. And so he goes in there, he hunts, you know, gets his camera, and he changes the batteries in it, won't work. And he called me today, and he was like, dude, I brought that camera home. I put brand new lithium batteries in it. I did everything. I pushed the reset button on it, and this stupid thing won't come on. And I was like, yeah, it's because you touched it, man. I'm just going to have to walk in with you wherever you go and set your camera up so you don't touch it, you know? Yeah. Just set it up on your phone, and I'll touch the camera. It's funny, when we first started, just talking about the scrape stuff, I got turned on to that, the Troy Pottinger, you know, like the Buck Fever, and dude, I'm a 100%, like, anybody can sell a lot of stuff, but that stuff works. I don't care who you are. If you've never tried it, you try it, because you're going to, it's impressive on how many different, my brother tries it in Georgia. He lives in Georgia. He tried it. I mean, he gets buck pictures. I tried up here in the mountains, North Carolina. Works up here. I've tried it a lot of places, and it works. I mean, it's some good stuff. Anyways, so we just got started on that Buck Fever synthetics, and I had built a scrape. And got some pictures on it. He was like, "Hey, man, you want to use some of that stuff for me?" And I was like, "Oh yeah." So, you still there? Dude, this is getting on my nerves, man.
Hey, it made this it 20 like minutes. It made it 20 minutes that time.
I mean, we're just going to do it like 20-minute segment. Jeez, it's aggravating. But this is just the mountains of North Carolina. It's just, you can't get Wi-Fi, man. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I noticed, because you're normally, like, where it says the percent uploaded, like, mine's at 99%. Like, as it goes along, yours is at 4%.
Yeah, 4%, yeah. I don't know why that is. I don't know how long it's going to – I mean – probably gonna take all night for it to get to 100, but whatever.
Did yours overheat at all on that last one?
No, I don't know what happened. Like, I still had full 5G service. Like, I don't know what happened. You just like froze up on me, and that was it. And I could hear you, from time to time.
The last thing I heard you say was you were talking about Troy's scent, about the working on the
Taylor working. So I'd got the Buck Fever synthetic stuff, and I'd put it on some scrapes, and I'd got some pictures of deers, and Taylor's like, "Man, I want to try that." And I was like, "All right." And so I built him a mock scrape, you know, Troy Pottinger style. And I was like, "You got a good trail camera?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, I got a good trail camera." And he put it up there, and I think it lasted like 2 days, and just this giant bear, like 450s, comes and just, I mean, dude, he took the batteries out of it, and like the camera was laying there, batteries out, and the batteries were gone. So I guess, and he ate them. I don't know. I mean, you know, I wasn't there when he did it, but it lasted like 2 days, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, it's funny. I had, as far as like talking about the Licking Branch stuff, so there's a few different things I had been trying. So Troy's stuff I've used for years, and then other Buck Fever before that. And then last year it was a buddy of mine, Matt Rankin, had turned me on to using an ammonia and water mix, just, yeah. Household ammonia.
Timber Ninja thing. Yeah, you said you could make like a big old batch of it.
Yeah, and I can't remember the mixture ratio, because I made a lot of it, so I had enough. I'd have to look back at what Matt had sent me, but, and he probably doesn't want me even saying it on here because it's a secret. But it's like, I want to say it was like only 20% ammonia and the rest of it water, maybe yeah, a little bit here or there. But like, I only used it during hunting season, and man, did it work really good. That worked really good. It's just, I was running so much stuff, it's expensive to buy other stuff. And then my buddy Kevin from Deer Hunter Podcast, he had developed some stuff that he had just sent me. I haven't tried it yet, called DH3, that's supposed to be pretty good. Yeah, and so I'm going to try that out. I love messing with it. I mean, pretty interesting. I mean, so I'm going to do some tests and see. Like, it is so cool, like, making scrapes and seeing, like, literally, as Troy says, trapping whitetails, like figure out how to make it work.
Well, you know, like the first podcast you did with Troy, I was listening to it and I was like, man.
Well, I'm shooting a new bow this year and I am pumped. After playing around with a buddy's Hoyt RX8, the smile on my face made the decision for me. The first thing I noticed with the new Hoyts were their extremely smooth draw cycles and the ability to adjust the back wall to make it rock solid like I prefer. I outfitted my own RX8 with the inline accessories that made installation extremely easy and balanced out the bow. My favorite accessory so far is a simple one. It's the Go Sticks 2.0 adjustable legs to make your bow like a tripod, but it doesn't interfere with any part of the bow or the limbs or anything like that. In addition, the integrated kickstand within the HBX Exact cams protect your string from excess wear when you put your cam into the dirt. Ground hunting or spot and stalk just got easier. If you want to experience what I'm talking about, head to your nearest Hoyt dealer and take a test drive yourself. You can learn more at Hoyt.com. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
Like, this guy kind of sounds crazy, you know? Like, if you're listening to Troy talk, like, he gets so excited about it. And you're like, man, like, who is this guy? And so you Google Troy Pottinger, and you see him, like, sitting behind these 180 and, I mean, just these megas. And you're like, I wonder if he's really using this scrape stuff. And then you watch him build these mock scrapes, and then he's got videos of these deer coming into these mock scrapes. And, I mean, they're just – I was like, maybe he's not crazy. You know, maybe he is, like, he's on to something. I was like, hey, man, I got to try it. So I got, like, the little pack, and I tried it, and I was like, dude, this, like, it necks down. You know, like, and people can bait in a lot of states, and in North Carolina you can bait too. You just can't bait on public lands. You know, you can bait on private, but on public land you can't bait. And a lot of people bait around here, and that's how they get their deer. You don't ever see a lot of people kill big deer on bait. You know, I just think those big deer are smart. You know, they're not walking in on a corn pile, you know, in broad daylight.
Yeah.
Anyway, so those scrapes is kind of like, that's how I was trying to get my edge, you know, in the mountains, was, you know, trying to get them coming somewhere where it's not just the nomadic movement that they make. You know, I'm trying to get them to come to where I need them to come to. And I mean, that stuff, that's, I've used it for what, like 4 years now or so. And before that, I mean, I just kick a place out and pee in it, you know. But
hey, I still do that. I use your Troy's or some other stuff for spraying on the branch, but I kick it out and pee in it, and that's how I do the ground portion. And I'm
actually,
you know, maybe I don't know what the reason is for it, but it seems to work. And I'm sure it's because, you know, your piss turns to ammonia, and essentially it's kind of the same thing that I'm spraying there. But it, I've not had any problems with that, and that's why, like, you know, you hear all, you know, people talking about, you know, even when I went up to Alberta about taking a bottle, they made me take a bottle to pee in while I'm in the tree. I'm like, no. The only reason why I don't like peeing out of the tree at times is when there's dry leaves on the ground and it's just so loud. Like, that's like the only reason. Yeah. Other than that, man, I'll just pee everywhere.
yeah, I'm with you. Like, I don't, my dad was big on that, you know, the whole, like, telling you about the woodsmanship thing. Dad was big on that, you know, like, don't pee in the woods, don't crap in the woods, you know, if you need to leave where you're hunting and go crap or go pee or whatnot. So I was, like, beating my head from the time I was a child, you know, like, if you got to pee, you just hold it. If you ain't got a bottle, you hold it. You don't pee anywhere you're hunting because it smells like human. And as I've gotten older, you know, I figured out that's a myth, you know, like, those deer don't care, man. They get turns to ammonia, and I actually, the 2020 deer, I literally walked to the top of the ridge, peed, walked back down. This was at like 9:45. I walked to the top of the ridge, peed, walked back down, and kind of like kicked my little spot out where I was sitting, made it a little better, and sat down, and I killed him at 10 o'clock straight up and down. Like, he didn't know. Like, he didn't know clue that, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I mean, I got up and walked 20 yards. You know what I mean? But still, it's there's a lot of luck goes to it, and there's a lot of, you know what I mean? It's the pee thing, it doesn't bother me. I'll pee out of a tree stand. Don't bother me none.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, like, you know, you're talking about the luck aspect of it, but I do believe that there's a lot of luck in deer hunting, but you need a lot of the good. You need to figure out the 85% of it and then get that 15% luck.
And yeah, I mean, the deer still has to walk by you.
I will totally take 100% luck if I can get it, but I don't want to rely on it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I mean, like, we used to have this saying, you know, this is better luck. You're better than, I'd rather be lucky than good any day.
You know, yeah,
like, 100%. I mean, if you're lucky, that's what my dad, he's always gave me crap about having a golden horseshoe. You know, he's like we were hunting in Ohio, Southern Ohio. I hunted up there the first year by myself. And, you know, coming from a place like this, you know, I saw a 10 point and dude, it got shot. Like, I was hunting in Ohio 2 days and the first 10 point that came by me, I had never seen a 10 point on the hoof until then. Like most of our big deer are usually big eights, you know, it's just the way it is. And I'd never actually seen a like pure 10 point. And, I mean, like I didn't even let him walk, dude. I just stuck him. And, he's like 120, he's like 120 inches. You know what I mean? Like he's no like giant deer or anything, but like, that's how I cut my teeth in Ohio. And, so I took my dad back with me the year after that. And, I think it was, that was on the first year I killed on Halloween night. And so that'd been like on a Tuesday or like a Monday. I think it was a Monday. And then the next year, the Halloween night had been on Tuesday. That year, I killed a little better deer that year. I killed another 10 point on Halloween night. And so the third year we went up there, Dad was like, how about you kick me that golden horseshoe? And I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I killed that's probably the best deer I killed up there. It's a mainframe 10 and got some, I didn't even mount him. He's actually sitting on top of the bookshelf. He's got some trash and stuff at his bases. And, I killed him on, it's like the day, the 29th or 30th of October. Like that Halloween, like if I'm going to go to Ohio, I'm hunting Halloween night. Like it's just my night up there.
You know, I've never killed a deer on Halloween and I feel like I've had opportunities around then and I've just never been able to make it happen. And for some reason, mark my words, but I feel like that's when I'm going to tag out this year in PA. Like I just, everything feels
Halloween
right. Yeah. About Halloween. And I have a spot that last year was super good from like the 28th to the 31st. And actually the buck I'm hunting in this area had showed up when I was driving back from South Dakota at the time of recording this. It was a couple days ago. On my cell cam, I found out that the Exodus Rival, that's an AT&T camera, gets service in the area. I get no Verizon service there. And, so I put a cell cam on it and, I got this buck right before dark after a rainstorm and that cold front that came through here at the beginning of October, which at the time of recording this was a few days ago. And he popped out right before dark and I'm like, dude, I gotta get in there. I'm going to have to, and I'm like trying to catch up on work since I've been back. And I'm like, I gotta get to that spot. Like I know he's bedding close and like with pressure coming in and all this stuff that's like with our bear season, we have a bear muzzleloader season and a muzzleloader doe season that opens up here. I guess it would be the 14th of October again at the time of recording this, but anyways, I'm like, I need to get in there before people really booger him up and like move him around a little bit, which like, that's what, you know, I know that you were saying, like, you don't see too many people, you know, in some of the areas that you hunt
and we do,
we do here, but like, it's just, there's more people, I guess. And, you know, and the areas I'm at and it's, you know,
I think Pennsylvania, you know, like I think you have more hunters per acre than we do in North Carolina. You know what I mean? Like I think Pennsylvania, it's more of, I'm sure I've never been up there, but you always read these stories and everything. It's like a, more of a heritage thing. You know what I mean? Y'all go to deer camp. Y'all do the, you know, we don't really have that here. You know what I mean? Like me and my dad hunt together, me and my brother, you know, that kind of thing. But as far as like me and my buddies, but other than that, we don't really have like a, you know, so you don't ever have really many, that many people walk in on you. I say that and I had a guy walk in on me Saturday. I've never seen a soul where I was at. And, I have this big, like laurely rocky knob in there. And that's where every good buck that I've ever seen or killed in there, he comes off that big rocky knob and I hear a limb snap and it's like 9:50. I hear a limb snap and I'm like, all right, man, here we go. And I kind of like lean over and I'm looking up that big ridge and I'm like looking for movement. I see the movement and I'm like, oh yeah, this is it. And here comes this guy in a blue sweatshirt, no orange hat, brown pants. And he comes walking. I let him walk like right up underneath me, and I'm like, "Hey, man, what's up?" And he was like, "Oh God, I didn't even know anybody else was in here." And I was like, "Well, I know that's a lie because I was the first one in the parking lot, and you had to park beside my truck. So you know someone is in here. You know, what are you doing wandering around at 10 o'clock in the morning with no orange on?"
Yeah.
And he didn't, dude, he was so lost. Like, he didn't even really know where he was at. And I'm glad it's probably, you know, his saving grace that he ran into me, because he's like, "Hey, man, if I keep walking out this lead, will I come out?" I'm like, "No, man, you won't come out nowhere. Like, you can walk that lead right there for several miles and not come out anywhere." And he was like, "Well, which way is probably the best way?" And I was like, "I hate to tell you this, but that big Lorelei top you just crossed, you got to go back, because that's the easiest way in and out of there." I mean, I wasn't telling him I have an easier way in and out of there, my access. But, I mean, I'm pretty, like, you know, I'm not telling everybody how I'm getting into these places, you know? I mean, because if I tell him one time, I mean, that's the way he's going to come in and out of there, you know?
Yeah.
I walk in there, and there's going to be somebody with a headlamp in my spot, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I I'll help anybody, you know, and I'm sure you're the same way. But, like, man, I've worked really hard to get one of those. That spot's a really good spot. I've had haven't ever killed a deer there, but, dude, but I haven't put the time in there like I have other places, like the 2020, 2021 spot. They'll put a lot of time in there, man. I've like you talk about wind checking your spots, you know, before season, just to see where your wind's going and stuff. I've done it in there, man. That's the reason I know that little bowl traps your thermal of a morning. Like, before the sun hits the valley, you know, your thermal's pulling down, I know that that bowl catches you. You know, it can't go any farther. It just sticks in that bowl for some reason. And, but, I mean, if somebody wants to start, like, we go in somewhere and somebody wants to start hunting and start doing the mountain thing, and they walk their miles and they wear the boot leather out with me, man, I'm all for telling them everything I know. You know, like, I'll help them any way I can. But, you know, some guy just walk in on you, toting a muzzleloader with no orange on, I'm not breaking all my secrets to you, man. You know, like,
no, and there's something to be said about spots too. Like, I, you know, obviously I give, you know, put a lot of information out in the podcast and I want people to be successful, but I'm never going to share spots. And when people ask me, you know, even about like areas, like, "Oh, what area are you in? What region?" Like, no, like I'm not, that should not be a thing that's out there. Like, those are sacred, and even not even for my own self, of anybody else that hunts those areas, I'm not trying to blow up any spots or like give that out. Like, I want nothing to do with that. And like, people should have to work for it. Like, I am all for, obviously, like, trying to help people learn so that they can find their own honey holes and their own spots and like make them have amazing experiences. Like, I want that. I truly do.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to give up my own spot. I'm not going to give up somebody else's spot. Like, that's not,
no.
And just, I'm sure, not the nature of doing it.
I'm sure you're the same way with your dad and your cousins and stuff. I mean, like, I have a nucleus that knows where I'm at just in case I need help. You know what I mean? It's small. Like, I don't just tell that information anywhere. And I, you know, there's a couple places that, like, Taylor, that I hunt, and I mean, me and him are tight. I mean, elementary school. And there's places that I like, "Man, if I kill in here, I'll just send you a pin." You know, I just don't, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's some of those places. And then there's places he's got like that. But for the most part, I'd say me and him, like, we know 99 to 100% of where we're at, just in case, because it's so far back here, man. And a lot of times you got to have some help, man. You ain't getting that deer out by yourself, you know?
Yeah. Do you backpack in any places that you go to?
Yeah. Me and Tyler's backpacked in and hunted. The speaking of Tyler, that big 10 he killed, he backpacked in on it, you know? And he backpacked in, set up camp, walked in there the first evening he was in there and kills that deer. Like, hadn't even got to sleep a night in the tent yet. Like, he walked in there. I mean, like, how much luck are you? I mean, he may not have luck with trail cameras, but, dude, he is a really good deer hunter, too. I mean, he's Tyler's a lot of that woodsmanship hunting. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he really plans his attacks out and that kind of thing. But he also is a very, very good shot with a rifle. Like, I mean, he's killed mule deer and stuff at 500 and 600 yards. And, I mean, he shot that deer at 200 and something yards in our mountains in a clear cut. He shot it and then thought he missed it, and it ran. It was running, and he shot it again on the run at 200 yards. He hit it both times. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that's most definitely impressive.
But that's the but way he hunts.
I wanted
here.
What was that?
That's the way he hunts here. I mean, he hunts here like he's hunting that west. That's just the way he wants to get on this big high knob and spot and stalk and or not spot and stalk, but he's trying to spot deer in these clear cuts, which works some. And I mean, not my style, but works for everybody.
Yeah. No, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier. Everyone's got their own style and things that work for them and what they have fun doing. And that's, yeah, it's cool no matter what. But I wanted to come back to you were talking about, you know, going to Ohio. But one of the things when we were talking at the Timber Ninja camp that I was like, I was really impressed with was, you know, you and Taylor, and it sounds like you and your dad and stuff, you guys go out of state quite a bit and try and hunt and have been really successful with it. Like one of the things just to kind of kick it off was that you were telling me that kind of blew me away was how you what you were doing with your meals as far as like you cooking dinners. Talk about that.
Okay, so this was a Taylor Cook brainstorm. Probably one of the best ideas I ever heard of. So we were like cooking these meals, like these big batches of meals, like, you know, chicken fried rice and shrimp Alfredo. And what we were doing is we were putting them in vacuum seal food saver bags, you know, in like meal portions. We'd seal them and then we'd put them in the deep freezer and freeze them solid. So whenever we get back to camp, you know, and when we're out of state like that, we're hunting is like, we're camping is like, I mean, it's like camping, you know what I mean? Like you're not, there's no bathhouse. There's no, you know what I mean? So all you got to do is boil a pot of water and you drop your whatever you want to eat in there. You boil it, heat it up, and it's just like you're eating at home, man. Like it's no freeze dried food, no nothing. You know, I mean, you just, that was probably one of the best ideas we've ever came up with. 100%.
Yeah.
Cause there's nothing like coming back.
Good idea.
There's nothing like coming back and eating that. You know what I mean? Like, especially, you know, it's, one thing that brings to mind is we were in, I guess it was Missouri. It was Missouri. Anyways, we kind of had some warm weather there, and then it dropped off cold. And one day it rained, and it was like, I don't even know how it was raining. It was like 28 degrees or 33 degrees. Dude, it should have been snowing, but it was like this sleety rain. And we'd been out in it all day. And we get back to camp, and all you have to do, man, is just boil that water and throw it in there. And we're eating, you know, deer meat fried rice. That was the trip. That was the day the tent failed on us. We have one of an Alux tent, and it's a teepee style tent. And there were three of us sleeping in it, so there's not a whole lot of room. And Taylor was like, "Hey, we don't need to bring the stove because there's three of us in there. We won't have room for the stove. You know, we'll just bring a regular like little propane heater." And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's work. Whatever." What Taylor forgot to do was bring the dang cover for the stove jack. Well, guess who's sleeping under the stove jack? It's me. So we get duct tape. We get duct tape, man, and we're like, we're trying to tape it up, you know, where it's somewhat waterproof. And that night, like, it rained. And you know how it is camping in one of those tents? They condensate on you. Everything condensates. You have three grown men snoring in there. It's condensating. So I have nice stuff. Taylor has nice stuff, like sleeping bag-wise. You know, I have a North Face Tundra bag. Taylor's got some nice stuff. And so I wasn't cold inside my sleeping bag. But when I woke up the next morning, I was like, dude, it feels cold in here. Like, it's like, I can feel it on my face. It's cold in here. So I reach over and I cut the light on, and my whole sleeping bag, dude, the whole outer shell of it is just solid sheet of ice from where that's condensed in there. The rain's poured through the phone jack. And Taylor tells this story a little different. I don't really remember it like he does, but he said that I was pretty fit to be tied. I was pretty mad because I was the only one that got rained on and it froze to us. That night was like, there was ice. We were frozen. Our sleeping bags were frozen. Our pads. You know what I mean? Like it was. It's funny now, but it was not. Yeah. It was not funny at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was not funny.
No,
at all.
No.
Yeah.
Not when you're trying to go. Hey, yeah.
No. And luckily, we tagged out early on that trip too. That was a. That was a good trip. That was a fun trip. The Nebraska, last year we went to Nebraska and that. That kicked our butts. And I won't lie to nobody, man. Those guys that kill those deer in Nebraska on public lands, like Northwest Nebraska, you can have every bit of it because I don't think I'll ever be back to the state of Nebraska. I didn't leave nothing there, and I didn't lose nothing there. Do you know what I mean? props to you, man. We saw some deer at the check-in stations and stuff that were some, I mean, just toads. And, I mean, I killed a $383 doe. And, dude, I was proud of her. Like, I might as well kill a 150-inch deer. Like, I was proud of her. I mean, I've seen hunting pressure, but that place was like hunting pressure. Like, I've never seen it like that in my entire life anywhere. You know, Ohio's got a lot of people, but Nebraska, I don't think it has as many hunters, but it doesn't have as much usable deer hunting land. You know, it's all that prairie and then the river bottoms, and it nicks everybody down to the river bottoms because that's the only thick where the deer can be. Man, dude, it gets western out there in a hurry. I mean, it gets pretty wild. It gets pretty wild.
I can imagine.
I would have took a flak jacket at least two evenings.
So other than Nebraska, how do you feel like what you've done in Western North Carolina and the mountains has translated to like when you go to Ohio or Missouri or any of these states? Like, do you feel like your scouting and what you've learned has translated to that?
We've always heard, you know, my dad's always said this. If you can kill deer in Western North Carolina, you can kill them anywhere. You know, because our deer density is so low, you know, and that's his coin and phrase. And I mean, it so far it's pulled true. I mean, yeah, we've got lucky a time or two. I'm not saying that, like you was talking about the luck thing earlier. I mean, we've got lucky a time or two, but you know, and I want to sound humble about this, as humble as I can sound about it. But I mean, we're pretty good at what we do, you know. I mean, like when we were going to these states to hunt, man, it ain't no riding around and going to town and everything. I mean, we pull a hard 7 days, you know. I mean, we're laying in there dirty faced.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seems like it works for us.
Yeah. But what do you feel like what translates? I mean, I know from the deer population standpoint, trying to find deer in North Carolina is super difficult. And, you know, I've always heard that from like Pennsylvania, like that was something my dad, you know, and everybody here has always said, like, it's like, all right, you can kill a deer here in the big woods or the mountains, like you can go anywhere. And I found it to be, I don't want to say easier, but kind of easier as far as being able to find deer, get on them and be able to do that. But what have you found to be like something that really translates from where you're at to going to these other places? Like what skills, I guess, do you guys feel like that you've learned to be able to read the woods when you go to these other states?
I guess it's, I mean, it can go a lot to like, if you're talking about reading sign, you know, reading buck sign in these other states, you know, what's usable buck sign and what's not usable buck sign is huge, you know, because in here, around here, you know, you find one horn bush. I mean, you're not going to hunt that one horn bush. You know, you find one scrape. You know, you're not going to hunt that one scrape. So, you know, I guess like take Ohio, for example. I mean, I know you've been there and you come through those big river bottoms and dude, it's just destroyed. You know what I mean? There's 15 scrapes up through there and there's horn bushes as big as your leg and your stuff. And so I guess that's like the starting point. Like it's the reading the sign part of things is because our deer densities are so low that you have to read your sign and be dead nuts on your sign or you're not going to see a deer. So you think about going to a high density place and you're reading sign that good on low deer densities. If you're in a high deer density place, it's going to translate to you're going to be all in the deer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And I mean, it's as easy as that, I guess. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. And I mean, it just the sign and the people pressure and like in Ohio, I hunt people as much as I hunt the deer. You know, I'm watching where people are going in, where parking lots they're parking in, you know, how they're getting in those woods. And I mean, I guess I'm just playing off of that as much as I would anything.
Yeah. And you just, what you just said there is such a good point. And I think it translates really well to Ohio specifically, where there is a lot of hunting pressure. And what I've noticed is like, you know, going to from a low deer density area in Pennsylvania, it's like you find good sign, you know what good sign looks like. You go to Ohio and everything looks like good sign.
Okay. Because
there's a lot more sign, it seems like they lay down. Yeah. But it's like now, all right, what's the next layer? And that's the people aspect. You know, it's like, okay, where are the people coming from? Now you find like these areas, and again, this is just my experience of it, but it's like you find these areas that have the good sign, have the good cover that they want to live in, or, you know, be able to live around, especially in those big woods areas where it's like there's a lot of big timber and there might be acorns one year, which is really good. And there might be not acorns the other years, but where can you find like the combination of like, you know, green briar and like all this other stuff that combines them, makes them feel safe in there. They have browse, they have mass crop, they have everything. And then away from the people, it's really not that hard when you put it that way. You know, it's obviously harder, you know, to make that happen and find it. Yeah.
You know, as well as I do, like when you're hunting out of state, like at you're at liberty of the rut. You're at liberty of weather. You know what I mean? You're trying to plan this trip in months in advance, and you're hoping that you're going to have, you know, a cold front or a whatever, you know, and you're hoping that you're not going to get walked on top of every time you walk into the woods, you know, and that's the thing that I kind of translated from here to Ohio was the getting away from people, you know, and people always say, oh, you walk this far in the woods, you won't see nobody. And in Ohio, it's that way, man. Like you get off the roads and you actually get into, I mean, people call Ohio mountains. And I mean, I don't particularly think they're mountains. They're just, you know, they're big hills. I mean, there's some big stuff in Ohio, but they're not like our mountains, you know, like they're not you know, 4,000 feet, 5,000 feet mountains, you know? And so there's a spot in Southern Ohio that I hunt, and it's on a, I almost said the name of it, but I'm glad I didn't. But there's one park, because I'm telling you, like, I don't know if you've ever been there when the rut hits in Ohio, like you're there in the rut. You know what I mean? People have always told me, you know, like the first few years I hunted up there, you know, I'd been always pretty lucky. And I think the first 3 years I was up there, I hunted like 5 days in 3 years. I mean, I was killing the first good buck that come by me. Like, you know, first Pope and Young comes by, it's stuck. I wasn't waiting on no deer. I mean, I was shooting the first good buck that came by me. So the third year, I took what I was talking about is getting away from the truck. I park and park in this parking lot, and it's just wide enough for two vehicles. And so I was nice enough, and I left, you know, a spot for somebody to park beside me. I could have parked right in the middle of it, and nobody could have parked there with me. But I was like, you know what, I'm going to be – you know, a decent somebody, and I'm going to park here. So I park there and I take off, and there's you go up this big bottom and there's a big ridge. And what it is, it's a windward side too, as weird as this is. So it's a windward side, and there's a rock bluff, and there's a clear cut across the holler on the other side. And those bucks were coming up this side, and they were wind checking that clear cut from the other side of the holler. And there was like this rock cut, dude, and it just pinched these deer down like to nothing. Like they were walking by you at 25 yards. Like you couldn't have drew it any better than the way it looked. That week in 4 days, I saw 22 bucks in 4 days on public land in Ohio. And like, I hate to tell this part too, but I shot the first deer I shot at was, I think he was a mainframe 10. He had five on one side, big tall. And, he was probably in the, I'd say he's mid 150s ish, high 140s, 150s ish, somewhere in that ballpark. And I shot a poplar tree right in two, and you know how that works. And then I was like, you know what? I seen a bunch more deer after that. They were shooters. They just, you know, either would come up one side of that gut or the other side, and I just could never make it happen. And the last evening I was in there, or last day I was in there, I was like, dude, I'm gonna hunt all day. I'd hunted all day like 3 days prior to that. And I had seen this buck like on Monday or Tuesday, but he just didn't give me a shot. He was a big mainframe 8, had trash at the base. And that's what picked him out the second time I saw him. I was like, oh, that's the same deer. And, it's, you know, it's like probably 18 inches wide, you know, just big, heavy, just, you know, those darker on deer up there in Ohio, you know, just like the chocolate colored horns. He came lumbering around through there, and he was at 40 yards. And dude, I don't know if like it's target panic or I don't know what happened to me, but like I drew back, manned, he stopped, and he wasn't even looking at me. He was kind of looking like off an angle at me. And dude, when I dropped the pin, man, I just sat it on his back, and I shot right over top of him. And I don't know, like that deer haunts me because it was a dandy. Like it would have been the biggest deer I ever killed in Ohio. You know, by far none. I mean, he was a big one. But like what I was saying is getting away. I kind of got off on a rabbit trail there, but it was getting away from the people. You know, and I'd always seen bucks up there. You know, and And I wasn't hunting all that far. The first few deer I killed up there, I wasn't hunting all that far from the road, but I was hunting a lot of people, you know, like, you know, where are these people coming in from this parking lot? Well, they've got to be pushing the deer this way. So I get up on this ridge, of course, there's bucks on there, acre and screen buyer, whatever you have up there. And that's kind of how I was doing it. It's just, you know, those deer are going to escape somehow. And that's kind of what I was hunting, was their escape travel, you know, their escape out of places. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to take the same kind of mountain hunter aspect, you know, leaving the truck, and I'm putting my boots on, and I'm heading. And that's when I realized what Ohio had to offer. Because I saw a deer that year that was like, yeah, he was big. And then the last 2 years I was up there, I never tagged because I saw what was up there, and I wouldn't shoot anything else. You know, I was like, no, I know what Ohio has to offer, and I'm just not going to shoot, you know, the first good buck that comes by me, because there's megas on public land up there. You know, I mean, a whole lot bigger deer than we got here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like, when talking about Ohio, and like the first, so I went to Ohio like religiously for 4 years in a row during the rut, and the first year I didn't kill anything, and then the second year I killed in 2 hours of being there. The second year, it was the second day, and the third year was the first day, like 6 hours into being there.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And then it's funny, 'cause I didn't go back for a while. And then I still haven't hunted the rut since the last time that I killed a deer there. And but there was definitely a lot of pressure, but I started learning kind of these spots that didn't get as much pressure. And it was like, honestly, a lot of the times there was like just going a little bit further, because, like, you know, you said, you know, you looked at a lot of places like in the southern Ohio mountains, the mountainous areas that, you know, is not very big, but that's compared to western North Carolina, which is freaking nuts as far as, like, that's some of the biggest mountains in that you have way taller mountains than we have in PA. You have them, you know, bigger than really anywhere. So to most people, that's pretty rugged terrain. So it's hard, you know, like when you look at it that way, it's like, okay. And that's into an advantage to somebody like you that's like, okay, I'm used to doing this and I can do 80% of that effort and get away from 100% of the people, you know, people. It's so true. And it is hard to do. Like, I mean, I'm sure you struggle with it even in North Carolina. Is like, if you have a week off during the rut and you're on a trip, to do that day after day after day, anybody can do that hike once. Well, 80% of people could do that twice. Now you try doing it three times, four times, five times, row. Six times.
Yeah, dude.
That's freaking tough.
It's brutal. My brother, I took him to Ohio with me. I think it was like the third year I was up there. You know, he's used to that Georgia flatland, you know. I mean, he grew up here, but he's lived in Georgia probably, I don't know, probably 10 years or 12 years. And he has got a county job, so he don't do a whole lot of, you know, physical activity. And I took him to Ohio with me up there, and I think it was like day 4 or 5. I mean, he was a trooper, though. I mean, he laid in there dirty faced. I mean, he did. And he looked at me. He's like, "Man, dude, I'm killed." And I was like, "Oh, me too, man. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm like some like Iron Man or anything, dude. I'm smoked too. But like, this is what we got to do, you know. This is what we got to do." And I think it was either that evening or the next evening, he shot at a buck. He didn't kill him, but he did shoot at a buck. He did get an opportunity. But yeah, I mean, he looked at me and he was like, "Dude, this is killing me. You know, I'm smoked. This is just." I mean, you do that, and that's like day five. You do that for 9 days. You know, whenever you're not out of state somewhere, you know, you spent that money. You're there. You know, you might as well hunt. You know what I mean? You might as well hunt as hard as you can, because you got 9 days or 7 days to get it done. So, I mean, what else you got to do but get back to camp and sleep? You know? And that's Nebraska. That's what kicked our butts there, was just something we had never hunted, man. Like, I've never hunted anything like that. I was lost as last month's Easter egg in that place. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so used to trees and dense cover and, you know, that kind of thing. And I mean, they had some cover, and they had some of those river bottoms were real thick and what have you. But like, I just felt like a fish out of water. Like, it just wasn't my thing. You know, like, it felt like we were in mule deer country trying to kill whitetails, and we seen plenty of mule deer. Like, we could, if we had a mule deer tag, dude, we'd all tagged out like the third day, been done. But those whitetails in that place, man, dude, they're like ghosts. Like, you think you're on them, and then you may look back through your spotting scope, and dude, they're gone for, you'll never see them again. Like, I don't know where they go. I don't know if they go in rabbit holes or what they do, but.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was just hunting in South Dakota, and it was, and we'd found some really big whitetail sheds and saw a couple whitetail does, but I'd never saw a whitetail buck the whole time I was there. Now, we were hunting mule deer, but it was just like, you know, I would have hunted it differently if I was hunting whitetails, but it was like, I can't believe I didn't even kick anything up that was like, you know, a whitetail. And it was just like, they were complete ghosts. But I understand the, you know, when you're getting put in a different spot, and like, you know, we were out there for 7 days of hunting, but technically about 8 days of being there. And like, you know, by day five or six, I don't care who you are, it's, you have to really put your mind to putting your boots 1 foot in front of the other. Like,
oh, yeah.
There was afternoons after I had a, you know, a failed stalk and all this stuff that I'm just like looking at my dad and I'm like, man, I just want to go back to camp and, you know, crack a cold one and just sit there and BS. And it's like, no, we're here. We got it. We got to make it happen. Yeah. We got to, you know, put the effort in. And like, you're always happy that you do. Like, I love that aspect. It's hard to explain because like, it does suck at times. Like, an out of state rut hunt for whitetails or whatever it is hard. Like, there's a lot of sucky times to it. Like, we glamorize it as it's this like amazing thing, but there's 95% of it is suck. I'm obviously grateful to be there, but
like I said earlier about the whole tent thing, you know, that's funny now.
Yeah.
The whole like getting drowned was funny. It's funny now. It's a funny story. I can tell it, but I'm telling you, when it was going on, it was not funny. It was not funny at all. And then like in Nebraska, we had I think we had 1 day in positive temperatures the entire time we were there. We saw negative 27 like 2 or 3 days. We're in a wall tent. We're sleeping in a wall tent with a little propane heater that we could get to like, we felt good if we could get it like 2-3 degrees inside that wall tent. You know, it felt like it was 70 in there. And I mean, that's tough to like, and knowing that, and you know what that terrain looks like. I mean, we're Northwest Nebraska, so it's the whole like South Dakota. I mean, you're covering miles, man. And there's like days where you'd wake up and negative, say it's negative 10. You're getting up and knowing you're about to walk like 14 miles, you know, round trip or 15 miles round trip. And there's a high possibility you're not going to see a deer because you ain't seen a deer in 3 days. You know what I mean? Like, once the shooting starts there, it's over. Like, those deer, I don't know what they do. I don't know where they go, what they do, because we spotted deer before season opened. You know, we spotted a few bucks. But once the shooting started, dude, it was over.
Yeah. It was funny. Like for me on opening day, my uncle shot a nice buck and went and helped him pack it out and everything. So now it's like your legs are kind of spent from day one. And it felt like I never recovered. Like I was like, you know, just going, you know, through the motions, just trying to, you know, do it. And every step was just like, oh, this is rough. But, you know, sleeping in a tent, it was funny. I told a story on a podcast probably a couple years ago now, but about, I did a backpack rifle hunt in Pennsylvania and we had set up where I learned that you don't set up floorless shelters in creek bottoms because it might look dry when it's snowy and icy, but as soon as that thaws out and you have your little wood stove in there, that turns to mud. And our sleeping pads were just in mud and water, and then there's so much condensation, and then trying to even get a fire started with everything being wet and iced over, it was just an absolute mess. And like, we laugh about it now, but at that time I was like, man, I feel like a really shitty
never doing this again.
Outdoorsman and just like everything.
You're just like, oh god, I'm never doing this again, man, this is terrible. And then you just pack up stuff and you do it again, you know, you just keep doing it.
You act like this was this great thing and you just do it again.
We were talking about the food earlier, right, where we vacuum seal the food, you know, and freeze it and whatnot. So all you gotta do is have a bowl and pot of water. Well, it was so cold in Nebraska, man, we couldn't get the water to boil. Like, we were trying to shield the flames, and like, dude, it was so cold. You could open a bush light. This is no lie. I have two witnesses of this. You could open a bush light, You could take a drink out of it, and you could set it down, do something for 5 seconds. You'd turn around, pick it up, dude, and it was just slushy. Like, it'd been open 10 seconds. It was just slushy. And we were wandering around in that, you know, and hunting in that. You know what I mean? It's just like, we're dumb, you know? God, it's fun. Yeah. You know, like, now talking about it, it's fun, man. It's, you tell people that. And we had a guy go with us on the Missouri trip. And Eric had never really hunted out of state. And super good dude. He's a killer here, man. He kills plenty of deer, but that's his first like real true like camping, hunting, and that was the only one that he went on. No, he hasn't went back with that. We burn him on the first one, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a good trip.
You add camping into the mix, especially when you get cold weather with it, and it's not easy, you know. When I hunted West Virginia last year, I set up a wall tent and I had my stove in there. I thought I was good. Cut some firewood. I was all, you know, I was great. We got 35, 40 mile per hour winds and it started blowing the wall tent around. It was super thin, just like not like a regular wall tent. And it was blowing all over the place and I couldn't sleep because it was slapping the sides and making all this noise. And then the one night it got so bad that it actually pulled the stove pipe out and ripped down the side of the tent. And I'm filling up the tent with smoke and I'm trying to, you know, and all these things are happening and I was sick because I was running low on sleep and I was just like, what am I doing? Like, you know, and yet like a week afterwards, I'm already planning next time to do it again.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, the time I'm like, this freaking sucks. Like this is, rough.
The thing that me and Tyler always say is like, you know, but like, what if we kill a deer? Like, it's going to be cool when we kill one. You know what I mean? Like, this is going to be a cool story when we kill one. You know, like, that's what it's always been. It's always been about the, you know, we're all, that's the only way that we can ever keep it upbeat enough. You know, it's like, yeah, but if we kill one, it's going to be cool, man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and you got to play those mind games.
Oh,
you
got
to play those mind games with yourself to keep yourself going. Like, I say, like, with any, even just hunting my home state in Pennsylvania and probably for you, North Carolina, it's like, it's, there's times in every season where I feel like I know nothing and I can't do anything right. And deer aren't doing what you think you're supposed to do, you know? And it's just like, it's hard, but you gotta have that. For me, I just have to have that goal in mind of like, I know, like, it just takes one. Like, it's just that one thing that can change your whole season from saying, oh man, it was a tough year to, man, that was a great year. You know, it just takes time. That one deer to make that all change.
I got a buddy he's part of our nucleus and he's always got that saying. That's where I come up with it only takes one hot dough. You know what I mean? Like, and that's a good way to look at it. You know, you're walking in 2 and 3 miles climbing our mountains. You know, you got to have a little bit of a pep talk before you leave the truck. You know what I mean? Like, you're really talking yourself into it. It's like, man, all it takes is one hot dough. You know, if I'm not back there, then I'm not going to kill him. You know what I mean? Like, how bad do you want to kill this deer? You know, how bad do you want to do it? So, I mean, that's pretty much what keeps me going is, you know, I'm not one of these guys that, you know, kills one big deer and I'm done. You know what I mean? There's guys out there like that. You don't want to do that every year. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I know it's not possible. You know what I mean? It's not reasonable, especially in our deer woods, you know, killing a big deer every year is few and far between, but I mean, it can happen. It's just, you really got to put the time in, dude. I mean, you really got to want it really bad.
Yeah. And there's no shortcuts to it. Like, I don't care how, you know, how good you think you are or what you have set. Like, you need to put the time to it. Like, you can luck into it the first day of a rut hunt or whatever, but you got to put the time in. And there's no, like, I'd love to be like, oh, if you only have 2 days to hunt, like, you can definitely get it done. But that's not the case. Like, you might be able to, but there's no definite to that. There's no definite if you have 3 weeks in a row to hunt. Like, it's hard no matter what. And that's, and I think that's what, you know, hunting the mountains where you're at or hunting the big woods of the mountains where I'm at and like hunting these areas teaches you that patience and that understanding of it. And it doesn't make it easier, but you understand that it does. It literally, and we say that all the time too. It's funny you say that. Like, my family always said, it just takes one doe. And like, I'll sit in spots for 4 days and not see a single deer. But as soon as one doe comes through there that's hot, it's like, all right, the whole world is opened up. Anything can happen at this point. Yeah. I might see the only $4 in the county in that next hour, but like but you just got to be there. And and that's what it comes down to. And, you know, as we're getting, you know, ready for the rut, like the time this comes out here at, you know, towards the end of October, it's like we're getting into that time. It's just, it's more of, in my opinion, it's more of a mind game than it is anything else to last through the rut and be successful.
Oh, yeah. And just keep beating yourself up every day and knowing that's what you're knowing that's what you're fixing to do. You know what I mean? Like, you know that you're going to be burnt by the time you get to your stand. You know you're going to have to do that 2 and 3 days on end. You know, Nathan Killen, you know, like he's big guy. I really look up to him, man. And he's super nice guy. And he made a comment one time and it kind of relayed to one of my dad's buddies that used to hunt the mountains is, you know, sometimes he sits on them like 3 days straight. Like he gives them like a 3 day rotation. You know what I mean? Just because you know, the first time you go in, you always have those butterflies. Like it's the best time to be there. But here our deer densities are so low, you know, it may take 3 days for that deer to even roll through there. You ain't boogered him. He don't even know you're in the world. It just make you take him 3 days to do that. So you got to think in your mind, like, dude, you got to do this 3 days in a row. If you have the time, you need to be there 3 days in a row. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of mental, like you said, it takes a lot of mental just strength to know that you're going to do that. You have to do that if you want to kill that deer.
And I've said it before on the podcast, but something that what I didn't know I was doing right when I was younger, but I was always, you know, your dad always joked with you about saying you have a horseshoe up your ass. Like that was what, you know, everyone always said about me because I was killing good deer when I was younger. And then I went through a spurt where I was like struggling and having trouble. And what it was I would, when I was younger, I was just willing to sit in the same spot for a long time. And it just happened. And then when I started like putting so much of this medium ahead, I gotta jump around. I gotta do this. I gotta do that. It was like, I was just chasing my own tail. And then once I got back to like, okay, you know, a spot's good. You scouted, like you have confidence. You gotta let it play its part because it doesn't, these deer in the mountains, in the big woods, in low deer density areas in general, no matter where you're at, they're not on a pattern that you can look at your cell cam and be like, oh, wait till it's the third day that he came in daylight and I'll strike. Yeah. That doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen.
No, man. No. No,
you know, like I was talking about the cell cam picture earlier I got of this really nice buck that showed up in daylight. It's like, oh, well, that's the first time he's been on that camera all year. I don't give a shit. Like, that doesn't matter to me. No. That means he's in that area. He's probably been in there more. I just haven't.
Yeah.
He just hasn't walked in front of this 20-foot view of this camera.
Yeah.
And I need to put myself in there for multiple days to have, you know, potentially an opportunity at him.
Same mindset, man. Same exact mindset. Like, you know, like we were talking about earlier where the cell cams are great tools. And trail cameras are great tools in the run of things, but they don't show you everything. You know what I mean? Like, you still got to be there. You still got to hunt it. Just because you haven't had a picture of that buck in 3 days or a week or 2 weeks or whatever, it don't mean he's not walking 10 feet behind that camera. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know that.
Yep.
And people put a lot of cash in that kind of thing. Like, oh, well, I know pictures of him. I'm not going there. I'm not that way, man. If I feel good enough about the spot, I'm going. You know what I mean? Whether I've had a deer picture in there or not, you know, I'm still going.
Yep. No, I would totally agree with that. And yeah, I now, as we're saying this, I got to put this in my own mind as I'm, you know, getting prepared for these longer sits and these things of like, okay, remember that, because it's tough. Like, as much as we say it, it's still tough to when you get in it. It's like, you know, and that's why I'm so thankful I've got a good community of friends and family locally that are good deer hunters that, like, I can call or they call me, and it's like when you're in a rough spot and you feel like you're not doing right, they can look at it logically and be like, all right.
For sure.
You have the information. Like, just sit there and wait it out. It's like, okay, you know, and you just get that in your head.
I got that same group of guys, you know, and that you can bounce stuff off of too. Like, you know, like your man, like, dude, I don't know if this ridge is the right ridge. And they're like, well, you know, why did you hang a standard in the first place? And you start telling it to them, they're like, man, it sounds right to me. But you've sat there, like, I don't know how your mountains are. It's probably a whole lot like ours. Like, you know, I can sit in a spot for, I can put 10 or 12 sits in and never see a deer.
Yeah.
And then I'll see two deer in the year, but one of them is the deer. That's just the way our, you know what I mean? It's just so just spread out and deer densities are so low. If you get down on yourself, dude, you'd never kill a deer here. Like, if you got down on yourself and quit, you would never, ever kill a deer here.
Yeah, dude, man, I'm in the same boat. I mean, last year it was like, I don't remember if it was 3 or 4 days before that I hadn't seen a single deer. And then that's when I ended up killing one. And it was just like, that's, you know, I'm putting together a video off of my last season. And I was joking with someone today. I think I was talking to Jason actually. And I was like, I have a whole season where I might not have a deer on camera that I had filmed on camera. There was some around that were in the brush or whatever. I couldn't get the camera on them, but I saw very few deer in the year, and that's not abnormal. And like that,
I think
that needs to be stressed, because like you might see someone like yourself killing these nice deer every year, or someone like me killing nice deer, or someone else. And it's like, oh man, I should be seeing these all the time. It's like, that's not the case. Like, it's just,
it's not
the case at all.
Yeah. People come up here and if people came to North Carolina, you know, and just because of the basing it off of what everybody else had killed, you know, they see these big deer, you know, so-and-so killed or whatever. Like, oh, well, I'm going there. And they get their butt handed to them. You know what I mean? Because this place is not forgiving at all. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I've lived here my whole life and I have to talk myself into stuff. You know what I mean? I've walked these mountains my entire life, and there's still days where I'm like, man, you just one hot dough. You know what I mean? It just keeps clicking in your mind, like, I got to go in there. You know, and this is all I've ever hunted. You know what I mean? These mountains is what I've hunted. This is where I cut my teeth at. It's where I live at. It's where I was raised. You know, and so I know what I'm getting into. You know, it's not a surprise to me, but it's still, you still got to talk yourself into it. Like,
you said you got to talk yourself into it from the truck. I have to talk into my under the covers of my bed. Of like, you wake up and you're in that like gray area. You know, you're like, I've caught myself talking to myself out of why it's a good idea to not hunt today, or like not go out or not go to this spot because it's hard to get to. And then I'm like, and then finally I snap into it and I'm like, I just need to get some caffeine in my body. Like, I'll be good. Like, just get your head on and do it. Like, it's a frosty morning. What are you doing? Like, get out.
Anybody says that they don't try to talk themselves out of it's a liar. You know what I mean? You see all the deer that Nathan Killen's killed and Troy Pottinger's killed, you know good and well that they've rolled over in the bed and said the same thing. Man, you know, my wind's probably not right for that spot, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Try to talk yourself out of it. You know what I mean? Everybody does that, you know? I do it all. I mean, I do it quite often. You know, it's like it goes back to the whole aspect of trying to break this media down in your mind, you know, where it's got to be this wind and it's got to be this and it's got to be perfect to go in there. And it's not always true, man. There's always, you know, I try not to blow my spots out, you know, like I said earlier, I can't get it in that one spot. I can't get it done unless I got a northwest wind. You know, I'm just not going to get it done in there. It's just the way the deer come in there. And if it's any kind of south wind, it's just shot. You know what I mean? It just blows the whole reason that I'm hunting there. But I've still sat in there on south winds because you just don't know, man. Like, you bucks chasing does, you ain't got a clue what's about to happen. You know what I mean? They come from every direction.
Yeah. And my dad's always said that. And even some of my uncles about, like, I'd be like worrying about like, oh, the wind's not doing this. And especially during the rut, like specifically during the ruts, like, you don't know where they're going to come from during that period. Like, if you've watched bucks chasing does and stuff, they do the most random stuff. And normally you're just trying to get the doe to get past you without smelling you. And then the buck's fine, 'cause he ain't worrying about a damn thing.
He don't care.
Other than that tail, you know? Yeah. And that's exactly the nature of it. So I don't know, man, but I'm looking forward to getting into it going through these ups and downs. Now I know that I got another guy I can call if I'm in a, you know, in a bad mental space.
Ryan, you've entered the
the realm of who I'm gonna call.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
But But anyways, well, it's getting late, buddy. I know you got a newborn baby at home. You don't get a whole lot of sleep as it is. So we'll wrap this thing up here. But do you have any place that you want to send people your Instagram or anything to be able to check out or any place like that?
That's another thing. Social media, man, I've been on it 3 years. I don't even have my handle memorized. You know, I think it's Ryan Elders 26.
I think it's Elders_Ryan some number, but, 26, yeah, I'll put links to it in the show notes.
Okay. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you having me, man. This is my first one. I don't know how good it was, but this is my first one. Under my belt. So.
No, dude, you did great. I'm glad that you decided to come on here and talk. Like I said, it was just I had such a good time talking with you at the Timber Ninja event and everything, and I was like, man, this would be cool podcast BS about some hunting, and I like a lot of the things that you say and your thought process behind things, and I think it's pretty good. So thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it, Bo.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.